It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been kind of cool, sunny, but windy out there. And the other day, a little snow fell, just a few flakes. We ignored it. We did not comment on it. We looked the other way. We changed the subject. We said, why don't we have a salad tonight, a big salad with cucumber and tomatoes. We said, why don't we ever go to South America? We said. The barn swallows have arrived from Argentina, speaking of that, and they have come and they've started to build their houses, which they build on vertical surfaces of mud with straw and grass for backing, and they stuff it with feathers, very comfortable, and they build them on the side of a barn. It's quite impressive to watch. The turtles are out sunning themselves on the rocks. It's the season for bridal showers, which most people in Lake Wobegon, women I should say, generally loathe and despise, but they go anyway, because you wouldn't want your niece Emily to be the first person in the history of the Western world not to have a bridal shower, and so you go and you endure the same games and you eat the same pastries and you give them the same gifts and you sit and you look at the bride to be and you think your own private thoughts, which tend to be either whoa, boy, she was coming close to her expiration date. She's lucky. She was lucky. Or you think she could have done better. She could have done a whole lot better. Where did she ever meet that guy? In the bus depot? Or where? What was she thinking? Pastor Liz gave the sermon on Sunday. She spoke from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John, in which Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. I gave my life for my sheep. And then Pastor Liz stopped and she said, what do you think of that? That he gave his life for his sheep. People kind of, you know, caught there. I mean, it sounded like a real question. It sounded like she was expecting an answer, like she was going to come out into the congregation and give a quiz or something. And you sit in the congregation during the sermon and your mind wanders. Of course it wanders. I mean, you can't keep your mind from wandering freely. And at that very moment, you were not thinking of Jesus. You were thinking of Marlene Shepherd, who used to sit in front of you in higher algebra class, and what her hair looked like. It was very dark. It was very shiny, and you had this temptation to reach out and touch it, which, of course, you could not do. She would have screamed, but you thought about it a lot. And as a result, you didn't do very well in higher algebra, and as a result, you weren't able to go into medicine. And so you think of more, and then suddenly you're supposed to think about Jesus. It's very, very, very confusing. Darlene, not Marlene, but Darlene, the waitress down at the Chatterbox Cafe, lost 20 pounds over the winter. She lost it starting back when she had her bathroom redone, and the workmen hung the mirror in the wrong place. They hung it on the door inside, so it faces the shower, so she could now see herself as she took a shower. And as a result of that, she gave up bread and pasta and dessert and everything else. And so she's lost 20 pounds, and men are leaving notes for her in the cafe, which she doesn't respond to. I mean, if you can't bring yourself to ask somebody for a date face-to-face, then what sort of person are you? But some of them ask for her phone number, and she says, look me up on Facebook. And so this last week, she had three men she was chatting with at the same time on Facebook, online. She was chatting with all of them. Thank God they were slow typists and rather taciturn men, not used to expressing, you know, intimate things. They asked her to go for coffee. She didn't want coffee. She works in the cafe, for heaven's sake. She serves coffee. She dreads coffee. But she said, well, I'll meet you for a beer. We can go to the Sidewinder bar in Millet. You wouldn't want to go someplace in town, but she'd go to the Sidewinder. And so she met them, all three of them. Met her there. They were surprised to see each other because they had things they wanted to talk to her about, and they couldn't with everybody else there. Two of them are on the same softball team, and then one of those guys went to high school with the third guy, and so they couldn't say what they wanted to say, and instead they started talking about construction and how to lay a concrete foundation. And she thought about asking them over, all three of them, to maybe move that mirror off to where she intended it to be, but she did not. Arlene Bunsen was supposed to have a garage sale this week, and she was going to get rid of all of her mother's stuff, which she has had in storage now for 18 years. She's held onto it. She was going to sell all of it. And she laid it out in the garage because it's kind of cold, put it out on the lawn, and there it all was. All of these objects, these historic objects, this enormous cast iron skillet where you used to fry up in beer batter, you would fry up walleye for 10, 20, 30 people over a campfire, but nobody's done that now for years. You can get them frozen, and they're better. And this hat, this straw hat, navy blue, that Mother used to wear with a veil that came down, made her look like a movie star, back when movie stars looked like that. And now nobody wears this hat anymore, this old Underwood upright typewriter and the ribbon all dried out, and those keys, that odd misshapen capital O that her mother wrote her notes on when Arlene was off at St. Ben's in college, and all this sheet music that was so much fun to sing, but nobody sings it anymore, so nobody has. She opened it all dusty. Maresy dotes and dozy dotes, and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too. Wouldn't you, soft as the voice of an angel, whispering a message unheard? Hope with its gentle persuasion offers a comforting word. And all these piles of National Geographics. Mother would never throw away National Geographics. She loved those color photographs and especially underwater things. I mean, she grew up in North Dakota. She'd never seen oceans. She'd never seen mountains. And she loved Jacques Cousteau with his scuba gear on and his little tiny French bathing suit deep under the sea, and all those odd, strange fish, not like walleye or pike at all. They looked like they'd been designed by Picasso. All of these beautiful things, Arlene couldn't bear to put them on sale. She called up her daughter Barbara Ann, who's in Chicago, asked if she'd wanted some of Grandma's stuff, and Barbara Ann said, yes, but I can't come get it until August, and so there will be no garage sale for the time being. Those beautiful rotary phones and that beautiful receiver curved to hold it up to your face, so comforting, the feeling of that steel, unlike that little flat rectangle that we that we use now, like you're holding a brick up to your up to your face. No, strange. Arlene took her goddaughter, Charlotte, out for lunch at the Midnight Bay Supper Club to congratulate her on how well she did on her piano recital, Mrs. Hoagland's piano recital a week and a half ago. And she told Charlotte that she hoped she would keep on taking piano because that Dvorak etude sounded so beautiful. And Charlotte said, no, she said, I want to take up trombone so I can be in the band. Arlene said, honey, piano is so much more beautiful. You can't play Chopin on a trombone. Well, she wants to be in in band with her friend Maya and her friend Jonathan and Sarah and Julie, and they're all in band together, and they need a trombone. And Arlene heard herself say, "Darling, girls don't play trombone." And she knew in that moment that Charlotte was now committed to the deal. Charlotte thrives on adversity. Going to Lutheran church has made her an agnostic over the years. And now she's going to, by God, play that trombone until she moves away or something. Arlene was a little unhappy. Her sister, Carolyn, used to play trombone. Carolyn always was odd. And she dated a construction worker named Ron for 11 years. They just dated for 11 years. There was no bridal shower, no dating shower for Carolyn. And finally, they went to Paris. And in Paris, he opened up a little bit and he talked a little bit. He'd sit in a cafe on the Champs-Élysées and he would talk. And so there in Paris, Carolyn asked Ron if he had any intention ever of marrying her. And he said he kind of liked it the way it was. And so they came back and she dumped him. And she joined a church to meet people, but she played trombone in the brass choir, and they played Bach and Palestrina and Telemann, yes. But men would look at her playing the trombone, and there just was a sort of stigma about it. Sort of a stigma. They would think, they would not ask, but they would think, what's it like to kiss a girl who plays the trombone? What would that be like? They weren't sure. She went off finally to avoid a bridal shower. She took a trip off to Virginia, off to Fredericksburg, and she toured the Civil War battlefield there. And she found herself in a group of 150 Confederate soldiers who were doing a reenactment, and they invited her to join them and be a camp follower. And they gave her a gingham dress to wear, and she bivouacked with them that night. And she slept in the tent with 100 men who were snoring, all of them. And she came back and she told Arlene about it. And Arlene said, "You slept with 100 men?" Carolyn said, "Yes, nothing happened. They just slept, that's all." "Nothing happened? That's the price of playing the trombone." That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the men are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.